Hi, everybody. This is Pam, and you're listening to the Male Podcast, He Stutters, She Asks Him, which you can find on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering at www.stutterrockstar.com. Today, I'm excited to have the opportunity to have a conversation with a friend from across the pond, Ollie. And I'm really excited to have had a chance to meet you finally, Ollie. How are you doing?
I'm very well, Pam. How are you?
Good, good. Enjoying a nice, quiet Sunday over here. And looking forward to watching the American Super Bowl football game later on tonight.
Awesome. Yeah, I don't really know anything about American football, but I have heard that the Super Bowl is on tonight. So
yeah, it's like an American holiday.
Oh, really? I know that there's a lot of fuss about the adverts in between the Super Bowl.
Yes,
there?
Yes. A lot of people watch the Super Bowl game for just that.
Awesome. Right.
Yeah. So to get us started, would you mind formally introducing yourself to us, who you are and
sure.
Where you're from and what you do to keep yourself busy?
Yeah. So my name is Ollie. I live in South London and I'm a student at University College London. I study speech therapy, and I'm in my third year of four at the moment, and I stutter. Aside from that, I like to read quite a lot. I like to listen to audiobooks. I'm quite big on audiobooks, and I enjoy playing music. I play guitar, and I sing a bit as well. And those are probably the main important things about me.
Oh, okay, great. How long have you stuttered?
I've always stuttered, but it's a lot milder than it used to be, and it's only in particular situations. So this kind of setting, I'm pretty much. Fluent most of the time, but if you put me out on the street asking for directions, it would be a very different story. Mm-hmm. Obviously having a stutter is what got me into wanting to be a speech and language therapist or pathologist, as you call it over there. I guess having to study it sort of made me a lot more open about it, and so it's not as severe as it was when I was younger, I think.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say having to study it has helped you to be a lot more open about it, does that mean that
yeah.
you haven't always been open about your stutter?
I think when you're a teenager, it's really, really hard to be open about it. So growing up, it was easier to try and hide it a little bit. But when I went to university before and I studied English, and when I finished the degree, it was there was a lot of anxiety around with everybody about what you were going to do with your degree, especially if you do something like English. And I think my speech got even worse, and it wasn't something that I'd ever really addressed. So that was when I was about 19 or 20. And so that's when that's when I started going to speech therapy properly. And then when I realized that talking about stuttering was probably the single most helpful thing in terms of easing it. For me, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Had you met other people who stuttered as you were growing up?
Yeah, not really. Weirdly, I remember I met one person at university who stuttered that I knew of. I'm sure I've met many people who stutter who I just haven't realised. But no, not really until I started working in speech therapy departments. You know, I hadn't really met very many people. Although it did turn out that my dad had a stutter when he was younger, but I just never realised until very recently that was the case. So that's interesting.
Oh, wow. So he had never shared that with you when you were a kid?
It's funny, isn't it? Maybe he did, and I didn't take it on board. But no, I don't feel like I and knowing that now, like I can realize that yeah, he does sort of stutter a little bit sometimes. So yeah, that's interesting how these things come out anyway.
Have you and he ever talked about it?
That's a good question. We've talked about it a little bit. I think he had some really not very nice speech therapy growing up. I mean, back when he was younger, it was a lot of encouraging you to sing as a way of, you know, getting over stuttering and things. All these not particularly helpful therapies. So maybe I needed to explain what speech therapy was and why I wanted to do it now, because he had some negative ideas about it. But no, actually, in fact, when it turned out that my grandmother was a speech therapist back in the days when you had to go to a theatre school to study speech and language pathology, speech and language therapy. So that was strange.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It must be in my blood. Yeah.
Yeah, so you said that it was because of your stutter that led you to want to become a speech language therapist, yes?
Yes, exactly. I so as I said, when I was about 20, I my speech got a lot worse, or at least it was having a much bigger impact on me, and sort of socializing. So I found a speech therapist in Oxford, in London, in the UK, and had a really nice speech therapist called David Ward, who just sort of helped me. I don't know. I didn't even see him that many times, but I just realized that it was a really useful thing to be talking about stuttering. But also, I realized that I really wanted to do his job as well. So it kind of solved two problems in one there. And so yeah, so we did a lot of work on easy onsets and things like that, and prolongations, which was helpful, but they're not things that I ever really use now. I think it was more just talking about it and realizing that it wasn't that it needn't have as big an impact on my life as it was the most important thing then.
So did you have therapy as a child too?
I did. I can remember when I was really young, being asked to draw a picture of my stammer, of my stammer or stutter. And then later on, when I was about 13 or so, I went to a group with some other teenagers, and we'd sort of practice using the phone and things. But it just wasn't the right time. I think I wasn't into it at that age. It was just another hassle to have to go and do that after school. It wasn't until I was about 20 that I was really ready to address some of the underlying issues that were making it worse.
And would you say that the therapy that you had as an adult was similar to what you had done when you were younger?
I think it was different in that when kids get older, maybe when they're, I don't know, when you're sort of 14, 15 years older, 14 or 15 years and older, you can start to do work around sort of the way that you feel about stuttering in like as well as speech techniques and things like that. So you can start to do things like cognitive behavioral therapy and things that like those are the kind of things that they do in speech therapy here, where you become more aware of how you're feeling when you stutter, and like, if there are any feelings of shame or anxiety, and then how you can sort of get to grips with those and be more comfortable as someone who stutters rather than trying not to stutter all the time. So I think therapy naturally changes a bit as kids get older. So that's probably why I had a different experience when I was 20 than I did when I was 13 or so.
And it's interesting that you found a male therapist to work with, because as I'm sure you're aware that the majority of therapists are female.
They really are. You're not lying there. I'm so on my course there's about 40 of us, and I'm the only male student.
The
And
only
some years there are no, yeah, the only one.
Oh wow. What's that like in
And
what's that like being in class?
I've just got used to it now, actually. But yeah, it is quite odd. I don't really know why there is such a divide still, because in things like nursing, you know, there are more men doing it now at least. I think maybe historically it kind of it was a bit like teaching. It was quite poorly paid and it wasn't really taken seriously, and that's just not, we haven't caught up with that yet, and so men aren't even really aware about speech therapy as a career. But no, it's fine. But if you're the only male in the class, it means you can't miss any classes because they always notice when you're not there.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, have you reached the point yet in your studies where you've actually been working with clients yet?
Oh yes. So we started. You start quite early on in the first year, doing quite general work in day centers, like nothing really about speech therapy, but just getting to know the different sort of client groups and maybe elderly people or kids. And then, yeah. So from the second year onwards, you have a lot of placements in primary schools. Or I had one. I had a stuttering placement with sort of children over eight, well, any children and adults, but over 8 years in my second year. But I was quite lucky to get that.
Have you discovered yet what clients or what type of population you want to work with yet?
I have. I mean, they always say that you shouldn't decide before you start the course or early on in the course, because people tend to go in saying, "Oh, I'm going to work with children," and then they realize that they really love working with older patients or something like that. But I've always wanted to do stuttering, and it's I'm 95% sure that that's what I will eventually do when I qualify after a while.
So, do you find it annoying that you have to learn all that other stuff?
I wouldn't say annoying, but I'm not as motivated with some of the stuff that we do, which is probably the same for everybody, but I hadn't appreciated just how small a part of speech and language pathology stuttering actually is when you take it as a whole. And that's probably something that's true of the general population, because when you say I'm doing speech and language therapy, they either don't know what it is, or they think it's like the King's Speech. So most people assume it's to do with mainly stuttering or like elocution, but there is just so much, so many other fields within it. We've only recently had our lectures on stammering, and so I was sort of waiting for 3 years to have those. That was really nice to get stuck into that at last.
Do your classmates know that you stammer?
I think they must do by now. And I mentioned it a few. Well, I mentioned it in our stuttering lectures because it was relevant. But I mean, I'm sure they've all clocked it by now. After 3 years, sometimes it's quite obvious. And it's not a secret by any means. If someone asks me why I'm there, then that is why I'm on the course, really. So, yeah.
Do any of the other students in the in your class stutter?
Not in my class, but I met a girl from the previous year, who'd graduated a year or two ahead of me, who had a stutter and had been through the same course. And I hadn't even realized until I ran into her at a stuttering event that we realized we had so much in common. We were at the same university, and we both stuttered. And I think it's not uncommon for speech therapists to get into speech therapy because of their own experience. I bet some speech therapists I've met had like voice problems, and that's what led them to get into it. So it does happen.
Yeah, it does seem to be the a way to give back, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it just, I don't know, it just sort of, it just motivates you in a different way, I think, than it would if you didn't have experience of it. If you didn't have experience of it, yeah.
Right. Well, I'm interested in asking you about something else. That's different than speech therapy. We met, quote unquote, after I stumbled upon your blog, and I very much like it if you could talk to us a little bit about what got you into blogging and specifically about your interest in mindfulness and stuttering.
I run a couple of blogs about mindfulness, and one of which is about mindfulness and stuttering. I'm not really sure what got me into it. It's a bit of a strange one because, as I'll go on to tell you in a minute about mindfulness, but mindfulness is not something that really lends itself to being written about. It's kind of the opposite of thinking about things and writing about things. It's about just experiencing things. So it's quite a strange thing to try and blog about, in that sense. I think what really got me thinking was there's a book by Ellen Marie Silverman, who I think you know of or know through Facebook.
Yes.
She wrote a book called Mindfulness and Stuttering, that came out last year, I think. And it's something that's been about, in a general sense. There are some speech therapists who use it in the UK, but there's not really been a kind of there's not really been a book that's brought it together yet until this one. So it just got me thinking about, about using it in my own life and trying to use mindfulness as a way to ease the effects of stuttering on my life. Yeah. Would it be helpful if I just explain what mindfulness was?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I was just going to ask you if you could, for people that are listening that may not know what it is, or maybe have not heard of it.
Yeah, sure. So it's something that there's quite a lot of buzz around in the last sort of 5 or 10 years, and I mean, it has its origins in Buddhism, but it is a secular practice now, and it's basically, it's something that's so obvious that it's quite easy to overlook. It's actually quite a profound practice. It's a sustained awareness of your sensations and your emotions as they happen, and so you just either through sitting meditation, so very formal practice, or through a more kind of informal mindfulness practice, you just learn to watch your mind and to gain a better awareness of how your thoughts and emotions interact and become more objective about your experiences. So I'm kind of proving my point about mindfulness being quite a hard thing to write about and talk about, but it is just that you learn to focus your attention on one thing at a time. So that could be your breath, or it could be any number of things. And you learn to just watch that and try to be non-judgmental about that. And that's quite a useful skill in lots of areas. And it's been used with people who are depressed, and it's been found to be quite helpful for them in terms of just being more objective. And from my point of view, it has quite a lot of has a lot of relevance to stammering as well.
What is that relevance to stammering? I mean, what is that connection?
Yeah. So I think, so the idea, let's spin it. So there was a speech therapist called Wendell Johnson, mm-hmm. who suggested that when you stutter, it's like that stuttering is often what you do when you're trying not to stutter. So there's this sort of tension within us, and that can often, perversely, that's what causes the stuttering, the trying not to stutter. It just got me thinking, and reading Ellen Marie Silverman's book got me thinking, well, if I can learn to just accept my stuttering as it is, because it is a part of me, if I can learn to just be more aware of it and to not become so emotionally involved with it when it happens, then maybe in the long run that might actually ease my stuttering. So it can be useful in that way, in terms of just allowing you to cultivate sort of more objectivity about what's happening when you stutter, and about the feelings that come up when you stutter, which is useful from a therapy point of view. And it's also useful in a more direct way, in terms of it allows you to really get to know what your body's doing when you stutter. It can often be that we get in that habit of just kind of getting through those moments when we stutter, trying to get through them and then get on to the next thing. But actually, if you start to look at what your body's doing, there's a possibility that you can sort of reduce the tension wherever that is. Like for me, it's my vocal folds, you know, like I'll sometimes block, and there's just real tension there. So there's a way in which mindfulness can be used to just have more awareness in the moment when you're stammering, when you're stuttering, when you're stammering. Because most therapies are kind of like things like CBTs, things like cognitive behavioral therapy, you talk about it and you reflect on it afterwards, which is great, but there's not many therapies that let you really kind of get into that moment of stammering when it happens.
Now, do you plan to include mindfulness in the therapy that you'll be doing once you're licensed?
Yes, definitely. I'm lucky enough at the moment to be on placement with a speech therapist called Carolyn Chaseman, who is sort of the most well-known speech therapist who uses mindfulness in the UK.
Oh, wow.
That I know. Which is just a really happy coincidence. And I've been in some of her sessions where she's been using it. And I think I would definitely consider it as an option. I think there's so many therapies, as I'm sure you know, and it's really a matter of finding the one that suits the person, because a lot of them work. When they've compared how effective, you know, all these therapies are, often they have very similar effects in terms of helping you with fluency. So it's a matter of matching the therapy to the person. But yeah, for lots of people, I think mindfulness could be helpful, even outside of speech therapy. It's a helpful way to live your life, I think.
Mm-hmm. Where can people find your blog if they're interested in learning more?
Oh yeah, that's a good question. If you search for mindful stuttering, it should probably come up pretty quickly. I would urge them to check out Ella Marie Silverman's book. There's a chapter by Carolyn Chaseman in a recent book, which I think is called Stammering from the Inside, where she talks about using mindfulness in stuttering therapy. So those are all good places to start anyway.
Okay, that sounds very interesting, the stammering from the inside. That just piqued my interest right away when you mentioned that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I can find the link for that book anyway, Pamela. I'll send it through to you.
All right. Great. Yeah. If you could, that would be great. And I'll actually link that to this episode when this gets posted. I wanted to ask you about your other blog. You mentioned that you do something on mindfulness and walking.
I do, yes. So I think when you talk about mindfulness, when you talk about meditation, a lot of people, the image that pops into their mind is of, you know, sitting cross-legged in the lotus position, and it's all about very, very formal practice. But actually, when we're talking about mindfulness, we really want to be making it something that you can sort of integrate easily into your life. And for a lot of people, finding time to sit down isn't always possible at the moment. And there are other ways to do meditation. And there's one way that I'm particularly fond of is walking meditation, which is really as simple as, when you're walking, you just learn to feel the sensations on your feet as you walk. And that's a really simple thing, but it's a way of just becoming more aware. And when you start to do something like that, you realize actually how little you're thinking about your environment and your sort of your body as you move around, and how much we're just lost in thought. So I think it's a really effective way, because you can, you know, if you pick up the basics of mindful walking, then you can practice that just as you go about your business in your daily life. So that's a kind of meditation that I find really useful, and I think is quite accessible for people. So yeah, if you search for a mindful walking blog, then I'm sure that'll come up pretty quickly as well. So if you're interested in mindful walking, have a look for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, interesting stuff. We've covered a lot in a short amount of time.
I don't know where the time's going.
Yeah, the time has flown. I wanted to ask you just one more question as we kind of wind down. You indicated that you feel that mindfulness helps one to accept their stutter.
Yeah.
Is that the case with you? Have you accepted your stuttering?
I would say it's not. I've accepted it more than I used to. But obviously, there are still times when it comes up, and it's just a real pain. And you wish it wasn't happening. But no, I have gone from feeling like stammering was, you know, the top thing that defined me, from it being just one of a number of things which is important about me. So yeah, and I feel like I have accepted it more than I used to, and it's an ongoing process.
Well, thank you for sharing that piece. I know that that's a personal question that sometimes people who stutter aren't really sure how to answer that, because I think I would have to agree with the way that you responded. I've accepted that I'm a person who stutters, but of course there are times when I wish it would just go away. It would make life so much easier. But it also makes us who we are, and it also makes us the unique individuals that we've become, I think.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, this is just me, but I feel like stammering is really interesting as well. And it's, you can go from feeling like it's something you just want to get rid of, to actually being able to say, yeah, it's a pain, but actually it's fascinating, and I definitely wouldn't be here if it wasn't for it. I heard a talk by Walt Manning, who's quite a well-known stuttering researcher and speech pathologist over in the States, and he had a stutter when he was younger, and it's not as severe as it was, and he was just saying that when he does stutter now, which is very rarely, he gets a kick out of it, because, you know, this is his area, and once you start to be a bit objective about it, it can be a really interesting part of ourselves.
That's definitely a cool way to think about it, that you get a kick out of it when it happens.
Exactly. Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes it's a pain. Yeah.
Yeah. Ollie, I want to thank you so much for being a guest and for sharing parts of your story. I think that you've really given us a glimpse into a couple of important things, especially why somebody who stammers wants to become a speech language therapist, and your thoughts on mindfulness. So thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you so much for having me on your podcast, Pam. It's been a real pleasure to have such a sort of relaxed chat with you today.
Oh, thank you, and it's been a pleasure having you on as a guest. And this has been He Stutters, She Asks Him.